go through it, transcribe it, then I read the transcripts over and over again, so.
Okay.
It's a lengthy process.
Of course, in the Old Testament, under Sid Lovett, you know, he was a very much beloved chaplain and professor at Yale. It was that I said at the time that if I ever get a chance to go back and study, I want to study.
Do you consider yourself to, are you a churchgoer? Do you consider yourself a strong?
I'm a churchgoer. I have a strong faith. Mm-hmm. I believe in Christianity as symbolic. I do not believe in the literal divinity of Jesus or the resurrection or any of that. I believe that this is all mythical symbolism.
Have you read Sir James Fraser?
Oh, yes.
Golden Bough.
But there's a lot more recent stuff than that.
Mm-hmm.
One of my primary interests is the relationship of early Christianity to the classical mystery religions, particularly the Greek mysteries.
Demeter.
And
the corn rites.
That's right.
Yeah, sure.
And Eleusis.
Yeah, sure.
And others. Isis and Osiris.
Oh, yeah.
Those. Let's see, so we were finishing up with the importance of religion in studies of international politics and that kind of thing.
And I think that maybe now I'd like to try and guide you a little bit.
Sure.
With some questions. Okay. My question here, which you partially answered, was why you were selected and by whom to become the chief of field operations, or at least to go and become Googleman's deputy.
Yeah.
And then to replace him. Is that a decision that's made by the division chief? Or
no,
is that a decision that's made at personnel?
That's a decision made by the chief of station.
By the chief of station.
Yeah. You can be sent out in one assignment and receive an entirely different one in the station.
Okay. So and you would have volunteered to become part of the station in your name and...
No, I volunteered against a specific job in the station.
Oh, I see. So there are actual job listings that come through personnel, which people say.
Well, that's a little bit formalized, but actually that's true. Yeah.
Okay.
They know when people's tours of duty are up and when replacements are necessary, and the station comes in saying request nominees for this and such a position or whatever.
Okay.
I mean, that's just bureaucratic kind of.
So then, I assume Gordon Jorgensen was the station chief.
Jorgie was the station chief when I went out.
Okay.
But within a matter of months, he went home, and John Hart came out as the new COS.
And that's just a matter of weeks, you say?
Matter of months.
It was
early 1966 that John Hart came out there.
Do you want to give me a comparison between their management styles, Jorgensen and Hart?
I really can't, because I never knew Jorgie, really.
Okay.
He was there. He was a very nice person, a very kindly person, and thoughtful. I forget why he left. Whether there was a special reason, he left early, I believe, and I don't remember why. Although it may have been that his tour was up.
Okay.
I just don't remember. He'd been through the bombing of the embassy I think it was the previous February.
That was while Pierre de Silva was the chief of station, right?
Yeah, yes. Pierre de Silva went home. Jorgensen, I guess, had been his deputy and became COS.
Is he a person that you stay in touch with, or you never really know?
I don't really stay in touch with anybody.
Okay.
With my old OCI crowd.
Okay.
We have a luncheon every 2 months. That's going back to the early 50s.
Okay.
There is a Thursday afternoon group of the Saigon people that meet in a restaurant downtown. Used to be once a week. I don't know whether they still do or not. I never went to one of those. I don't know why.
Okay. Well, let's cover the period.
So
upon arriving in Saigon, your impressions.
I think I was like everybody else. I was scared silly. And you read all these stories about grenades coming through the window and the automobile window and that kind of thing. And you drive around for a few weeks with your window only an inch and a half open or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you decide that, look, you can't live like that. That what's going to be is going to be. And screw it.
Did you have a cover?
Cover was just police advisory, U.S.
To the special branch.
To the special branch. I was guess it was USA cover of a sort.
Okay.
It was very light cover. It was not backstopping anyway. It was just a nominal thing.
What does backstop mean?
Backstop means thoroughly, well, let's call it this way. When I was in Tehran, I was second secretary of embassy.
Okay.
Very privileged position I had.
Okay.
Fully backstop diplomatic cover.
Okay.
As what backstop means is that I was put in the personnel files of the Department of State.
Okay.
I was a legitimate Department of State Foreign Service Reserve officer throughout all the Department of State records, payrolls, insurance funds, everything. No matter how anybody tried to check me out, they would discover nothing about CIA, but only the Department of State. Now that's backstop.
Yeah, and that's back in, yeah. That's in Tehran. But there was nobody went to that length.
Oh, you didn't. You only go that length for example, our Moscow embassy people will never even be CIA, period. They'll be put in the Department of State at the very beginning.
Right.
And
okay.
Stay that way all the way through. At least that's the way it used to be. It's not that way anymore.
So most people from the time they enter the agency will have a re-backstop right from the beginning.
Depending on their future assignment, very few people.
Most people
who come in are going to be given light military backstop, light Department of Defense backstop.
What about changing of identities altogether?
It's happened.
Okay.
Not very often.
Okay.
It's happened primarily post facto. After something's happened, the person has to be protected.
I see. Okay.
Occasionally, I think I can recall one or two cases where a person had a phony identity from the very beginning.
Okay.
But it's very rare. That kind of thing is very rare.
All right, then. Impressions of the Tucker Googleman and how he briefed you and oriented you to what your assignment was going to be.
Oh, there's nothing big deal here.
Okay.
I mean, you go out, you give them the desk.
In the embassy or at special branch headquarters?
No, this was at the embassy annex.
Annex, okay.
Behind the embassy. Second. And you're getting a desk, and they say, welcome, let's go down to the Imperial Hotel and have a beer. I mean, that's your greeting.
Yeah, okay.
And,
just try to get you relaxed.
There's no, not that. I mean, there's no, very few places is there any formal indoctrination or orientation. Now, I set up an orientation program for newly arriving officers because I was on the first wave of the big expansion. I was on the front edge of the wave of the big expansion. So that we had a lot of officers coming from all over the world. And I did set up an orientation program for them, which involved some reading material and a lot of talk and discussion.
Okay.
And systematic coverage of certain things, personal security, aircraft security, a variety of things.
Okay.
And did this for the next year and a half or so.
Basically, then you're handling people that come in. What, in terms of your position in the station, are you like the number three person?
No, I'm. Let's see. There's chief of station, deputy chief of station. They're over there.
Yeah.
Then there's. Then there will be a CFI, Chief of Foreign Intelligence, and Chief of the Corps in Action. I forget what the structure was. Then there will be the branches. And my unit was part of the liaison branch, the chief of which was a fellow that came out at the same time I did. Named Jack Stent. But then there'd be a lot of other branches. There'd be a unilateral operations branch, there'd be this branch, that branch. But we were liaison branch because we worked with the local nationals.
Well, but in how many branches might there have been?
In the station?
Yeah.
Maybe as many as 12 or 14.
Oh, okay.
Because there's going to be communications, there's going to be a special intelligence branch, DDI unit out there. It was a big station. There was hundreds of officers in that station.
Hundreds? Yeah, okay. Did you?
So, we had, when I got there, we had about 14 province officers. And we rapidly filled up to the time we had. How many provinces did we have? 44?
44 plus. Somebody must have been running Saigon City, too, which I suppose probably was equal to a province.
That was, that was handled by, that was not part of my branch thing.
Separate branch, I suppose.
Separate section within the liaison branch.
Okay.
I had field operations, which meant the province officers. So I say we had about 14 there when I got there, maybe 12.
Okay.
And we must have had about 50. We looked at strength of 50. They kept trying to give us more, and we didn't want them. We couldn't use them.
Okay, and how were your 14 province officers distributed around the country? Was it fairly even?
No, I was sort of, I suppose, population centers and various major points and provinces of particular interest. A lot of provinces were empty.
Okay.
But we had to fill them in. We had we set up six regional officers.
Okay. Were they? Did you also have regional officers when you got there?
Not really.
Was there a system in place of province, region, national?
No. We set that up just about the time I got there.
Okay.
Setting up regional officers and appointing officers to be regional officers.
Okay.
And we were the first. The rest of the station was not operating that way. Now, for example, there's the liaison branch, then there's the several branches, actually, I guess, concerned with covert operations of various types.
Okay.
Now, they were all, some of them were paramilitary, some of them were pacification or local development. Village development. Each one of those was run separately out of Saigon. In other words, when they had 44 province officers, they'd have 44 guys coming in and out, each one of them under the direct supervision of the branch in the station.
So in other words, liaison branch had a province officer, but then the covert operation branch might have had a province officer in the same province.
Oh yes, or several.
Or some, would they be in some cases the same person?
No, they would not be the same person.
I see, okay.
The FI guy, or foreign intelligence man, he was your police special branch advisor. He would not be a covert operations man.
That's foreign intelligence?
FI, yeah.
Okay.
The covert action people, they were mostly from, they're a breed apart. Especially so-called PM or paramilitary types.
Okay.
And they've always had a sort of a checkered history with the agency.
Are these the people that would dealing with Air America flights and stuff like that?
No. We did that as much as anybody.
Okay.
But they would, most of our PM people in the station, and some of our FI people, PM, paramilitary, okay, foreign intelligence, most of the PM people, some of the FI people, were all, you might call them refugees from the Cuban failure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more than one of them said that they were on the losing end of the Cuban operation. They were damned if they were going to be on the losing end of the Vietnam operation.
Are these actually Cuban people,
American,
or are these
CIA
Americans?
People involved with the Cuban.
Okay.
Cuban enterprise. Back from 1964, 65.
Okay.
Now, John Kennedy got this bug up his tail about
Castro.
And after the Bay of Pigs, the CIA was sort of turned loose to do almost anything.
That's right. Well, I've read the history of J.M. Wave under Lansdale elimination by illumination.
Oh, not Lansdale.
He headed the special operations group against Castro.
He may have headed some group down there, but Bill Harvey was the guy in charge.
Yeah. Okay. Bill Harvey reported to Helms and to Lansdale's Operation Mongoose.
Well, you see, Lansdale was sort of a nut. I knew him in Vietnam. He was off the wall.
Why do you say that?
Well, he was living back in, where'd he come from?
Philippines. The Huck Rebellion.
He was living back in the Huck days, and anything they did then was great, and anything that they didn't do was impossible. And so he'd come up, a friend of mine here in Washington introduced me to Lansdale, a part of it. And I came away from that just shaking my head, you know.
Yeah.
And then I was in several conferences with him, which he was also a member out there in Saigon.
In Saigon, yeah.
And I said, boy, stay away from that guy.
A lot of people say that he's the term they use is eminence grise of counterinsurgency because of the programs that he developed in the Philippines. Do you buy that?
No, certainly not. I don't buy that.
Okay.
I don't buy that. He was a military type that got involved in guerrilla warfare in the Philippines. But he had nothing to do with the agency policies, to my knowledge. And certainly the programs that we had in Vietnam were never inspired by him.
I understood that he was an unofficial liaison to Thang, General Thang, who was the head of Revolutionary Development.
Well, see, that Revolutionary Development, that was fairly late in the game.
Okay.
And Lansdale was like those two DDI guys that I had back in the research branch of the Soviet division.
Okay.
You got to figure out an assignment for this guy. It's going to keep him out of everybody else's hair.
Yeah, well, the government just did a report on Cords, a little booklet that they printed up. A guy named Thomas Scoville wrote it up on official history of Cords. And it spends about 10 pages in the end on Cords and about 80, 90 pages, well, kind of a mimeograph. About the development of it, and they said, well, Lansdale was sent over ad hoc in 65 and never had any impact is what they said, is that he never had any impact, and that when Cords was eventually formed in 67, they offered him the job of senior advisor in TuCor, mm-hmm. and he turned it down. Yeah, but it was in the development of the policies of pacification, his ideas were discarded routinely, and he had no impact. That's what they say. That's the official history. I was wondering if that's with an inside group.
Yeah.
If that was the view also.
Yeah. He was the original Ugly American.
Oh yes, no, I'm aware of that.
And with the Ugly American being an entirely reversed in connotation from what it says.
Yeah.
And
well, that's Graham Greene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was a fifth wheel out there.
Okay. And what about his friend Lucy Anconi?
Luigi was something else. I knew Luigi from Tehran.
That's right. He was in Iran before he was in.
So we were old friends when we got out to Vietnam.
I see.
Luigi was everything that is. He's the original colorful soldier fortune. And not crazy like a bunch of those guys. You know, the Green Berets are crazy. I don't know whether you've heard that before.
Oh, I live next to Fort Devens.
Oh, okay. Well,
and I know a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah okay.
They're crazy. I mean, I would put a bunch of those people in the category of psychopaths.
I would agree with you.
But Luigi
controlled psychopaths.
Some of them not so well controlled. Luigi was not a psychopath. Luigi's only problem was that he was too blunt and direct. He could be extremely diplomatic, which he was with the counterparts, with the Vietnamese or the Iranians, whatever.
But too blunt with the agents.
Yeah. Well, he was always he was a great boozer.
Yeah.
And so he had a whiskey voice that you wouldn't believe. They had him on TV here a couple of years ago. He's still the same old Luigi that I knew 20 years ago.
Yeah.
He was a great guy, and he was smart,
mm-hmm.
and he was a fellow that you call has street smarts. But mm-hmm. when we're talking about streets, we're talking about the dark back alleys of a place like Istanbul, or the dark shadows down by the river docks of a Saigon or something.
Trudeau Street, yeah. Well, he seems like the
Trudeau
kind of person
Street,
who
right.
could...
Trudeau was bright. That yeah. was brightly lit. Down in some of those other places, it wasn't so bright.
Oh, okay.
Those places where Mac the Knife likes to hang out.
Yeah, okay. And those were... That's where Luigi hung out.
Luigi, he knew his way around. He could take care of himself.
Yeah.
And he did...
Was he with one of the branches?
No, he was floating emissary of some sort. And he was, long before I got there, actually when I saw him in Tehran, he'd come back out of Saigon.
Yeah, he had been there in 54 running operations against North Vietnam.
Well, no. See, I was in Tehran until August of 64, right?
That's right.
Okay, Luigi was in Saigon in 62 during the coup.
Right, that's right.
And so he came out to Tehran after the coup business.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay.
As I recall, I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure that's. Although maybe he went from Tehran to run the coup in Saigon. I don't know.
Well, he certainly did run the coup. That's
the
word. Yeah.
He did. And this shook Jack Kennedy up a great deal too. Jack Kennedy really didn't realize that these things were going to kill people.
He didn't.
I don't think. And it was only when Diem was killed,
mm-hmm.
As I understand it, Kennedy was really shook up and suddenly realized that this is something that basically, in the final analysis, is something that he had brought about.
Well, you have to imagine.
He suddenly realized that, you know, this is a high-stakes poker game. This is not penny ante.
Yeah.
And he ran into that with Khrushchev in Vienna.
So you might have been a little naive?
Kennedy?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
They have a president.
Yeah, okay.
And up until something real happened. Every president thinks they're going to talk about Washington to some great deal and go down in history. Everyone on the flat on their feet.
Yeah, because they're going against, the Russians have their own interests.
They have their own ideas.
Yes, right.
Anyway, Luigi Canino, he was...
I understood that he, in 67, eventually became a province officer.
Yeah, he did. I forget what that was all about.
Well, a guy named Frank Scotton told me that Luigi was dropping flower pots out of a window onto passerby's
heads.
Yeah,
that's right.
John Van.
Yeah.
Would they figured John Van was the only person who could control him, so they put him as a province officer, and it was in Fubon, and he called it Fuelba.
Yeah, John Van, he was region two, wasn't he, in the train somewhere?
What
was it?
He was all over. He started in three, went to four, and then up to two.
He was a menace. He was another menace. Yeah, he could run. Maybe he could sit on top of Luigi, but I remember that flower pot business, yeah. But Van was not... He was an egomaniac. And he was power hungry. And he was all over the place, that's true. He was USA.
That's right. I always thought he was... had to be CIA, but under USAID cover or something
He was never CIA.
He was a menace.
He was legitimate USAID.
Menace to the...
Yeah, he was... never understood clandestine operations. Never understood intelligence. Which a lot of them don't. A lot of your policemen don't.
Well, then now that's a very interesting thing, because weren't the special branch advisors, weren't a lot of them policemen from the United from America?
Well, we had
some
of them.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd forgotten all about that, as a matter of fact, until you reminded me.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of guys on contract.
Okay.
A number of whom were ex-policemen. Yes, as province officers. They were not CIA staffers.
Were these people that you hired? Or
the agency hired them. I didn't hire.
Not you, personally. Were you in a position as the head of field operations to hire and fire people?
No, I sent a number of people home.
I see. But you could transfer them out of field operations.
Well, I could send them home, or I could... actually, the chief of station sends them home. What I have to do is talk to the chief of station in it. Which I did on more than one occasion.
Well, give me an example of what would be a reason for sending somebody home.
Okay, there's one boy, and this is one young man. I said, boy, young man, he was my age or older. I mentioned his name over the telephone the other day, off the record.
Yeah, Ray Valentine.
His name was Ray Valentine,
okay.
Back on the record. Okay, this fellow was a province officer up in Tay Ninh province, which is up in the Parrots Peak.
Yeah.
Up on the Cambodian border.
Yeah. Familiar with it.
And this guy was literally scared out of his wits. I mean, basically, Tay Ninh province was sort of VC hunting ground. This guy was scared out of his wits, and he spent most of his time in Saigon or in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than staying on post in Tay Ninh. He built himself bomb shelters up there and everything else. Big, deep dugouts in the ground. He, Ray, began pulling some funnies on us. Which it became evident to me that he was close to a breakdown. He was hitchhiking flights here, there, and elsewhere. He was, best I could reconstruct his movements, he was in province less than 10 or maybe even 8 days out of a month. We had standing rules about reporting their whereabouts and activities and travel plans, and you'd see him in a bar in Saigon when he was supposed to be up on the post.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some other things, some discrepancies. He suffered a supposed to have to call it a blackout I ran into him in Saigon, and he could not explain to me when or where or how he'd gotten there. And I had to check with Air America, and finally did track down that he had hitchhiked a flight to one place and then another flight into Saigon. But this was a complete blank for Ray. So he went on
legitimately?
Yes. Yes, I believe.
It wasn't that he was...
No, he was not. Here.
Running opium from Laos to Saigon or something like that and saying...
No, not for a minute. I don't think. We had that out there, but that was not... Our people weren't involved, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay. But you could check with a flight manifest find out his...
Find out his movements and so
forth. Okay.
And so he went home on home leave, and this was a... not exactly upfront way of handling the problem. But some of this came to light while he was on home leave. And so we asked Washington not to let him come back out to the station. And Washington...
So now, would he have been the, as I understand, he would have been the Tainan special branch advisor?
Yes.
Right.
And
okay.
Also, he'd run his own operations up in Tainan, too.
Okay.
But yes, he was the special branch advisor to me.
So,
so